My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you until noon, and then we will give way to D'Lo and KC. And they'll be hanging out with you until four, talking a ton of NBA playoffs. We've got NFL draft recap to Sean Reed, who covers the Las Vegas Raiders for The Athletic. He'll be joining us in about 15 minutes to talk about what the Raiders did over the three-day draft process. The NBA playoffs, though, we talked a little bit about it in the first segment. We didn't even mention Jalen Brunson. I'm so torn on Jalen Brunson, dude. I decided he's not a 1A a while back.
Oh, no. You were wrong.
And now, like, right. But I don't want to admit that.
Oh, no.
I'm just telling myself, well, it's because Embiid's hurt. And it's because that weird ending in game two. It's the only reason they were up 2-0.
What's he averaging in the series?
It could really be like 3-1 Sixers. That's what I'm telling myself right now. But Jalen Brunson kicks so much ass, dude.
He is.
He was so awesome yesterday.
Absolutely dominating. There's one play where he's just like kind of like looking the other way and running right down the middle of the key. And everyone's like, oh, and he just like turns to the basket and lays it right up. And you're like, what was everyone doing there?
Here's how you know Jalen Brunson's sick as hell. First game, 22 points, 8 of 26, just abominable. Not abominable, but bad. Next game, 24 points on 8 of 29. He was 2 for 12 from 3 combined in those two games. But he also has 7 boards, 7 assists, 8 boards, 6 assists in game 2. Then game 3, he figured it out. 39 points, 2 rebounds, 13 assists. He was 13 of 27. They lose that game. But then he bounces back on the road in game 4. And goes for 47 on 18 of 34, 4 boards, 10 assists, 1 turnover.
Mm.
Like, are you kidding me? The fact that here's where the 1A part comes into me. The fact that he's figuring this out as the series goes along, and he figured out ways to be effective in the first two games, despite the fact he was 16 of 55 from the field.
Yeah.
That's a 1A. That's a 1A player.
Okay.
And now he is scoring the hell out of the ball to go along with his 23 assists the last two games.
Yeah, he's been really good,
just
man.
Just sensational.
Yeah, he's been sensational. And that entire team, you know, the other guy who's been sensational is Hart. Like, he's just,
man.
Every time you turn around, what do you have, like 17 boards yesterday? Every time you turn around, he's got something silly. And just talk about an impactful player, and like watching Philadelphia just like not have an answer,
mm-hmm.
is wild. And again, they're beat up.
Yeah.
But they're not good enough. I mean,
That's it, dude.
I'm watching Tobias Harris trying to defend Jalen Brunson on mm-hmm. the perimeter. Like, he's getting down in like the Keegan Murray like big wingspan.
Yeah.
You're like, that's what your answer is right now in the playoffs. You don't have anyone else that you can throw at Brunson.
It worked the first two games.
I guess.
But dude, you got to adjust. There's seven of these games, maybe.
Maybe, no.
There's going to be five of these games.
There's at least four and a half of these games, Kyle.
You got to figure this out. Yeah, Josh Hart, to your point, this is points and rebounds. 22 and 13, 21 and 15, 20 and 6. Then yesterday he goes 0 for 7 from the field, but has 4 points, 17 boards, 5 assists, 3 blocks.
Yeah.
Like, man, just a tornado of a basketball player.
And the rebounds that he gets
are not a joke.
Well, no. And they were late. He had 5 offensive rebounds, and he just broke your soul.
Yes.
He took away your soul. Every single time you thought you got a stop, he would fly from one side of the court to the other and jump up and grab a rebound and then kick it back out for another.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely spectacular to watch him work.
Yeah, man.
Man, yeah. Like, talk about just a wild, crazy difference maker that, like, man, if the Kings could have ever got their hand. It's too late now. Like, the Knicks are never letting him go at all. But, you know, they're hobbling through this first round. Just wait till, you know, OG Anunoby's got a little bit more time to heal up. I mean, again, he played like 47 minutes in this game. But if they can get Mitchell Robinson back and healthy, like, they got a little bit of an opportunity.
It's a tough look, that DNP CD for Buddy Hield.
It's horrible. Sorry, it's buddy.
Really bad.
Yeah.
And especially on a night they scored 92 points.
Especially on a season where you're unrestricted free agent afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yikes, dude.
And, you know, he's 31 now, Buddy is. And it's very possible he's actually 37. We just, they Stop. Haven't told us yet.
Stop. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
That series is over to me. Clippers-Mavs. I thought the Mavs were winning that game by double digits. When they cut it to, like, I think 7.
That game was on crack, man.
It was insane. That first quarter was bonkers.
Paul George, just
insane.
Yeah.
Totally insane.
I was watching that and I was thinking, this is so like retro, like 8 years ago, just full-fledged ISO versus ISO. Every single time down the court, it's James Harden doing his ISO versus like whatever. Like, it just felt like the entire, whether it was Kyrie or it was Luka, so much ISO basketball and so high quality. Like, some of the greatest ISO players we've ever seen.
Yes.
Matched against each other, going ISO every single possession.
It was like, so fun.
Yeah, it's like, this is wild and crazy.
I love the style of game the Kings play and the Warriors play, where it's the Spurs played for all those years. It's just ball movement and drive and kick, and you're getting open shots, and it's very democratic, and everybody's got the ball. It just, like, I was so enthralled by that game last night. I usually hate the my turn, your turn thing, but when it's my turn, your turn, and everybody's cooking, that's fun.
11 of 19 from the field, 12 of 17 from the field. That's what, like,
it was 14, Paul George and James Harden.
Yeah, 14 of 25 and 10 of 24. Like, it literally felt like you're watching, like, Rocky.
It was crazy.
It was, like, blow after blow. Like, both teams just, like, pummeling each other.
Yep.
Yeah. Incredible.
33 for Paul George, 33 for James Harden, 40 for Kyrie, 29, 10, and 10 for Luka. Luka wasn't even good, and he still had 29. And he was a plus 10.
When Kyrie starts going, you feel like every single time he shoots a ball, it's going in.
It's ridiculous. No matter where he's shooting it from or how he's shooting it, that layup he hit to give them the lead.
Oh, through three guys? Like the all... yeah.
Like, what do you do?
He just hung in the air, and then everyone starts coming down. And then he just hung up there still and then flipped it up and over the top. You're like, what is happening?
It's just brutal. Here's where the like coaching aspect and the perils of the ISO ball offense, where not everybody's touching it all the time. The Mavs, Kyrie hits that ridiculous layup to give them a 1-point lead. Paul George makes that ridiculous three from the corner.
Oh, yeah.
To retake the lead. Wild. Just an insane shot. Kyrie misses a layup. Harden scores, 4-point lead. Harden hits his free throw, 5-point lead. And then Doncic hits a couple free throws. Harden makes a shot. With 39 seconds left, 5-point game, it gets kicked to PJ Washington for a three. And that's just like, bro, PJ Washington hasn't touched the ball in forever.
Like, no.
What he had, his last shot before that was with 6 minutes to go.
I think that was Kyrie dishing it to him, and it was, he was wide open, and then nothing.
That's not who I want taking the shot in that spot.
No, I thought early fourth quarter, while they were exchanging, you know, they were fighting back and forth. Mm-hmm. Westbrook and Plumlee had like five plays in a row where they were. He just kept Westbrook yes. just kept either getting to the rim or throwing the ball to Plumlee for a bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this really, really hard fought, like. That's yes. what you need your second unit to do.
Yes.
Like, keep us in it. Keep us in it.
Mm-hmm.
But to blow a 31-point lead and then hold on, just wild.
Very impressive, dude. I was so ready for the Mavs going into the fourth quarter. I was like, they're winning this game by 10.
Yeah.
They're going to pull. And, dude, all credit to the Clippers. I did not think they had it in them.
Modern NBA. It's wild.
Yeah. Ty Lue, man. What a coach.
Ty Lue. And then big shout out to our guy, Mike Anori, Kings legend, former assistant coach mm. here in Sacramento. Who had to fill in when you saw that, right? The head coach for Minnesota, Chris Finch.
Oh, yeah, he busted up his knee.
He blew his patella tendon.
Oh, no.
Mike Conley slammed into him on the sideline, his
right.
own player.
I did not realize the extent of that damage.
Oh, no, he goes down, and then Mike Anori had to fill in and even do the post-game press conference. And I guess Micah has become like a meme. Like, he is so good. Like doing the sideline hits, that it's like a treat for everybody and everyone loves him.
Hilarious.
So then he got to do the post game because Chris Finch is back, like
in an MRI machine.
In an MRI machine. Yeah, and he's shot. I mean, he's gonna be probably wearing like a straight brace. Yeah, patella tendon, no joke at all.
That's wild.
Yeah, well, absolutely wild. That was a great game. And hey, I'm hard on Carl Anthony Towns. Holy cow, man! The jump hooks in the lane. Good yeah. for you, bro. Get down. You're 6 foot, 7 foot tall. Like, get down there and like
it. Whew. When Carl Anthony Towns plays like he did last night, my outlook on the Timberwolves changes tenfold.
Yeah, stop shooting bad threes all yeah. the time,
dude. He's extremely skilled, big.
Yeah.
Go score.
Yes.
Yeah, if he's playing like that and you get these performances from the Timberwolves, might be a little bit of a problem. Our Timberwolves. That's my running bit. I love the Timberwolves. Our Timberwolves. Are going to be a problem. Let's talk NFL draft with Tashawn Reed. He covers the Las Vegas Raiders for The Athletic, one of the best young journalists doing it right now. We will dive into this Raiders draft class, some of the thinking behind those picks, some of the roles for some of these picks, and how he thinks Tom Telesco and Antonio Pierce did in their first draft together. That's coming up next here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
The NFL draft is in the books. The Las Vegas Raiders. My favorite pick of the draft. Brock Bowers, tight end out of Georgia. But to go through the Raiders draft with us, one of the very best young journalists in the game, Tashawn Reed from The Athletic. He covers the Las Vegas Raiders. Tashawn, thanks so much for making time for us today, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate the kind words.
Yes, sir. All right. So you and Vic Tafer wrote something really interesting in The Athletic about just kind of this draft and the vibe around the building with Tom Telesco and with Antonio Pierce. How do you think this draft might have looked different for the Raiders under the previous regime?
It's hard to say. I think their needs would still be the same, you know, in terms of what everybody was focused on going into the draft, quarterback, offensive tackle, cornerback. You know, and in terms of the quarterback situation, there really wasn't, you know, much they could do. I mean, there weren't any available that were worthy of the pick when they came on the board at 13th overall. Maybe they would have had a little bit more urgency to go get that quarterback. It would have been year three for the previous regime of Josh McDaniels and Dave Ziegler. And, you know, especially with the Jimmy Garoppolo move not working out, it would have been a lot of pressure on them to land that quarterback of the future right now. And so maybe they would have heightened their offers that they made, you know, to the Commanders for the second overall pick, or even to the Patriots for the third overall pick, or, You know, moving up to get a guy like a, Michael Penix or JJ McCarthy, maybe would have been more of a possibility. But I think with this regime, Antonio Pierce, I know he was interim coach last year, but this is really year one for him. And same for the GM, Tom Telesco. While they were still exploring avenues to add a quarterback, I don't think they had the same level of urgency that there probably would have been with the previous regime.
You know, when we look at the pick that they did make, Brock Bowers, it just, like for me, it was just such a spectacular pick, like the best player available at that moment, a guy who can be a game changer for them. And it felt right. And it also felt like something that in the past, maybe the Raiders would have botched. Just where are you at with that pick? And how do you think he fits in with Mayer and their current group?
Yeah, honestly, when it first came in, I didn't get it. I just thought, even with the quarterbacks being gone, I thought there were some offensive tackle and cornerback prospects that were still available at that point in the draft that would have made sense to take at 13. And even if you didn't think they were worthy of being taken at 13, you could maybe trade back and get them later on. That's probably what I would have done, just my initial reaction, but. After sitting on it for a few more days, it makes sense. As you said, Brock Bowers was far and away the best player on their draft board. He's arguably a top five player, when you put position of value aside in the draft. It is a rich pick to use on a tight end, considering, they just took Michael Mayer with a second round pick last year, but that was a different regime. And so, they're going to make moves for what fits them now. And there's a lot of opportunity for those players to stay on the field together as well, given Bowers' versatility. He's a guy that he can line up as an inline tight end, but he really spent most of his time at Georgia in the slot as a receiver, and then also split out wide as a receiver, and he even played some H-back lining up in the backfield. And, Mayer, he isn't a guy that's strictly an inline tight end either. He can also split out wide and play receiver. And so they can move those two guys around and work them in with their receivers. Obviously, Devontae Adams leads the way, and Jacoby Myers had a really strong year last year. And so they have a lot of weapons, when it comes to the passing game. It's just a question of, who's throwing them the ball.
Tashawn Reed covers the Las Vegas Raiders for The Athletic. Were you surprised they didn't take a quarterback at all?
No. I mean, if you look at Tom Telesco's history, I know they took Easton Stick with the Chargers, but he typically doesn't draft quarterbacks unless it's like he's the guy,
Sure.
And it's pretty clear that he's stepping in and he's starting. And, once those top guys went off the board, there really weren't any more of those types of players available. Spencer Rattler, who didn't go into the fifth round, he had some starting upside, but there's just a lot of questions about whether he'd be ready to do so in year one. And so, given they put a significant amount of resources, I would say, into Gardner Minshew. I mean, 2 years, $25 million isn't nothing. And
yeah.
They have Aiden O'Connell in tow already, who's, essentially their starter for most of the season last year. They weren't going to force it just to take a guy would add unnecessary controversy and discussion about who's going to be the guy and things of that nature. And so, it's year one, so they don't necessarily have to have their quarterback of the future in place this year. I know fans are eager for that, but it's always next year.
There's always Kirk Cousins next year when they've got
to stop.
What do you think about this Jackson Powers Johnson pick? The Raiders did need to address their offensive line. He seems like he's a good one. Whether he can, what position he's going to play, I don't think we know quite yet. But just what were your overall thoughts when they were able to land him?
Well, he's going to play guard. They re-signed Andre James as center this offseason. So he'll be a guard for sure. It's just a matter of which side he lines up on. But I think he's another guy that many people would have said was the best player available, with that pick, in the second round. Mm-hmm. I think most people had him rated as a first-round caliber player. And so they got good value there. And he's a guy that should be able to start year one. And then down the road, who knows what happens with James, if you need him to play center, two or three years down the line, he can do that as well. He's All-American at that position. At Oregon last year, and he just fits that mindset that they're looking for under Antonio Pierce, that gritty player, physical, not afraid to, kind of be a little dirty in certain moments and kind of embody that right away that they used to be known for back in the day. And so it just makes sense. I know that offensive tackle is considered to be a more premium position you know, than guard. But good players are good players, you know. And if he was far and away their top-rated offensive lineman at that point, which he was, then they made the right move in taking him.
Talking with Tashawn Reed, covers the Las Vegas Raiders for The Athletic. They took two corners, and I know corner is kind of one of their biggest needs, or was one of their biggest needs going into the draft. They take two, both of them on day three. Do you think either DeCameron Richardson or MJ Devonshire will get a chance to start this season?
I mean, they have an uphill battle, I would say. You know, currently on the roster, the Raiders, you know, sort of have a two-way competition in terms of veterans between Ja'Quarian Bennett and Brandon Faison, and maybe Richardson or MJ could get involved in that competition. You never know how practice can go in OTAs and training camp, but, you know, be a little bit of a uphill battle, I would say. And also, I think cornerback is a position that the Raiders could potentially look at free agent options as well. I mean, Stephon Gilmore is still out there, Xavien Howard, Steven Nelson, and there's a couple other, you know, veteran starting caliber cornerbacks to where, you know, if they want more of a immediate answer at that position, they could go get a veteran. Whereas I really do think with Richardson and MJ, they're more long-term guys that are kind of raw and need to be developed before they're ready to start, you know, right away.
Overall, just what is the vibe there in Las Vegas? It feels like this is a group that's sort of come through like kind of a dark, awkward time. And, you know, Antonio Pierce really did kind of capture the imagination of everybody. And things are kind of, it feels like the momentum is good. But what is it like when you're there? And is it different than it was last year at this time when things were a little unsettled?
Yeah, I think the main difference is everybody is having, I shouldn't say everybody, but there's a sense that, you know, everybody is having fun coming to work now. They enjoy the culture. It's a more positive environment. Not to say that they're, you know, not still working hard and, you know, instilling discipline and things of those nature, but it's not as authoritarian, you know, as people described it to be under the previous regime. People are more comfortable being themselves, and you know, that might, fans may not think that that's a big deal, but that stuff does factor in to team success and, you know, building something that's sustainable over time. Now, does it mean that they're going to make the playoffs and make a run this year? No. But, you know, when you're in your first year, that's the kind of stuff that's really important that carries on forward. And so, you know, their roster, I think it's improved, you know, you could say. I mean, between signing Christian Wilkins and, you know, you got two guys who should be starters right away in Brock Bowers and Jackson Powers Johnson. And, you know, we'll see a quarterback, maybe Minshew, if he wins the job, can be an upgrade over what they had last year. But I still think they're probably about the same caliber of team, you know, 8 or 9 win team. And, you know, it's still super early. You know, we'll see how things, you know, play out over OTAs and training camp. But, you know, it would be a surprise, I think, if they made a big jump this year. I just think, you know, between the quarterback position, cornerback, and the offensive line kind of collectively where that unit stands. I just think there's a lot of question marks that kind of make it hard to see the team making a big jump in terms of wins. But from a culture standpoint, I feel pretty comfortable saying that they're in a much better place than they were last year.
Check him out at The Athletic. He is Tashawn Reed. He covers the Las Vegas Raiders and does a great job doing so and did a great job with us today. Thank you so much for making time, man. We appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all having me.
Tashawn Reed, one of the reasons I subscribe to The Athletic. He and Vic Tafer do a really good job on the Raiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, really, really good. And like he said, there's a long way to go before training camp. But at minimum, the vibes with the Raiders now are so much better than they were last year.
I think
at minimum.
Yeah, vibes are a big deal in the NFL. Huge deal.
For me, vibes are a huge deal every day, but particularly in the NFL.
That's right.
We're not done talking draft, though. Nick Wagner, he covers the 49ers for ESPN. He will be joining us next. We will also have the handoff. D'Lo and KC will be in here as we get ready for them to take over for us at noon. Talk some NBA playoffs with those guys. NBA playoffs, NFL draft, Nick Wagner from ESPN coming up next on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Microphones are good. Been talking a lot of NFL draft today. Taking a look league-wide. We've taken a look at the Las Vegas Raiders. Let's take a look now at the 49ers with Nick Wagner. He covers the 49ers for ESPN. Nick, thank you so much for making time for us today. How would you grade the 49ers draft overall?
I knew you were going to do that.
It was a layup for me.
I give them an I, but not for incomplete, but an I for I have no idea how it's going to turn out. So I am very anti-grades. It is the ultimate exercise in confirmation bias. And as long as my employer doesn't ask me to do it, I refuse to participate. So on to the next question.
Go ahead, James.
I've always done the same exact thing. Like, they're like, hey, how about draft grades? Like, yeah, no. I'm good. Like, oh, well, yeah. No, that's kind of what we do here. It's like,
They got some players.
It's what you do. You can ask someone at the desk, go ahead and do it. That's fine. But that's not what I do. Like, I've got to deal with these people tomorrow when I gave them a D like that. And no, I don't think that I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to let somebody prove awesome. Who they are. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like you're basing the grade on your preconceived notions about guys that you've watched 20 minutes of YouTube video. I mean, like that's what I mean by confirmation bias. It's just, I like this draft because I've heard of these guys is often what it is. I think it's a silly thing. I get why people do it because fans do love reading that stuff. If you look at the metrics, yeah, I understand that, but certainly not in my wheelhouse. Not something I'm doing, like, again, unless I'm being asked to by the people who pay me.
This is Nick Wagner, covers the 49ers for ESPN. The Niners didn't take an offensive tackle. They did not draft a tight end. Are those still to you their biggest weaknesses on the roster? Or does the team feel like, yeah, hey, we're good enough at these spots to go win a Super Bowl still?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously I think it's been proven now over the last couple of years, really, that they're bigger believers in their offensive line, particularly in Colton McKivitz, than the general public is. And I guess I can understand that to some extent because they've won a lot of games with Colton McKivitz as their right tackle. The issue that I keep coming back to when it comes to the offensive line discussion is that, yes, they've been fine in terms of the regular season. They've been fine for large chunks of the postseason. They haven't been fine in the biggest moments of the biggest games. And it's been a repeated issue. And it's not just right tackle. It's been right guard as well, at center in some occasions, certainly back in the Super Bowl against the Chiefs the first time it was. And so I think that to me is like, hey, can you find a way to upgrade here? But I also understand to some extent where – first of all, the Niners are very picky about what they're looking for on the offensive line in general, but particularly at offensive tackle. They want guys who meet certain criteria in terms of short space, speed, things like that, arm length, all of those kinds of things. And picking where they were picking, I think we would all agree, guys, they were just kind of in no man's land in this draft. And for them to get one of those top tackles, they were going to have to do something significant from a trade perspective, either trading a player or trading like a future one or something to get up into range where they could get a tackle. And so I think all of that kind of combined for the perfect storm of they weren't able to get that guy. And then as far as tight ends go, I think it was really just a situation where, yeah, they could have had their pick of, you know, kind of after Brock Bowers, any of those tight ends or a lot of those tight ends, but they had bigger needs, corner specifically there in the second round, and then getting an offensive lineman of some sort in the third round. And so, again, I think sometimes the draft, Kyle Shanahan always advocates, he wishes the draft was first because then you could take the best players regardless of position and then fill out needs in free agency, but that's just not how it goes.
Yeah, they also, they made the bold move there in the first round to draft Pearsall. And then we didn't know what that meant for Debo or Brandon Ayuk. And at this point, I think we all know that that means the chances are that they're just going to have a really stacked wide receiver core, at least for a season. How surprised were you about the Pearsall draft? And what do you think, how do you think he fits in year one, year two?
Yeah, I wasn't that surprised at all in terms of the pick. I should say I wasn't surprised at all in terms of them drafting a receiver in the first round, because I would argue if you looked at their top three needs going into the draft, receiver was one of them. And I know everyone always looks at the year that's right in front of them and bases their what they think the team needs in the draft based on that. But if you look at it, this team is really drafting, and every team should be drafting for the next 4 years, not just the next one, but the Niners in particular are in a position where there's not a lot of starting spots available. They have to be thinking long-term, and the decision at wide receiver, the Brandon Ayuk, the Debo Samuel situation has always been kind of hurtling toward them having to make a decision, and likely that decision was going to be keeping Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel probably not being here. But it was also always likely, most likely, to be made in 2025 because they can afford to have both of them, especially with Ayuk. If he signs a contract this year, his cap number goes down. He's not making that much money, even though it looks like he is, based on what the contract would be. He's not making that much money, and Debo is. And then that when that finally reverses, Debo is probably no longer on the roster, and Ayuk's cap number goes up. So I feel like 2025 has always been kind of the target. Now, could that have changed and could it still change if some team makes some crazy offer that the Niners are expecting? Sure. But name me a player in the league that's not available if a team makes a crazy offer, right?
Sure.
So, with the exception of Patrick Mahomes anyway. But I think that's always kind of been the case. And so I understand why it got amplified because we're inching closer to that 2025. But guys, teams have been calling about Brandon Ayuk since March of 2023. So This is not new, but the Niners want to keep him. He's always kind of been in position to be their top priority, and he only really kind of drove that point home with his performance last season as he continued to build on that 2022 season. So as for Pearsall, I mean, obviously the goal is that he's going to eventually step into a starting role, likely opposite Ayuk when that time comes. But for the immediate future, I think he gives them a guy who's really, really good going over the middle. He can work in with Juwan Jennings. The other nice thing with him is that he can play all the positions, so he can fill in wherever needed. when the Niners kind of inevitably have injuries at that position, as we've seen in recent years. And if you go back to last year, when Deebo Samuel was hurt, 49ers offense was about a yard and a half worse per play whenever they didn't have Deebo Samuel on the field.
That's crazy.
And I think part of that is Deebo Samuel's really good. The other part of that is they didn't have great depth there. So maybe Pearsall, I'm not saying he would keep it at that level, but maybe it's not quite as dramatic a dip if Deebo Samuel's off the field.
Nick, hearing you say all that makes me realize that Rod Streeter has the opportunity to do the funniest thing ever. No, Nick Wagner covers the 49ers for ESPN. Where were we? What were we talking about? Wide receivers. Is Juwan Jennings done in San Francisco after this year?
I think it's going to be hard to keep him. And the way I've said this before, and I would say it again, like if you'd asked me 2 months ago, a month ago, and really any time in the last year, you know, to rank the likelihood of the guys being on the roster of those top three receivers in 2025, even though he's not signed, so it sounds counterintuitive, I would have said Ayuk is number one most likely, and then Jennings, and then probably Deebo based on his cost. But the Niners have been trying to sign Juwan Jennings for a while now. Obviously, they gave him the second-round tender, so they think very highly of him. That also kind of prevented other teams from coming in and giving him a big offer. But I think if you're in Juwan Jennings' situation right now, the Niners are likely trying to sign him to a contract like they did with, let's say, Dre Greenlaw from a couple of years ago. And if you remember that deal, guys, Dre Greenlaw had some injury issues. He'd also been really good. The Niners got him at a relative bargain based on the fact that he had some injuries and was looking to just get some security because he hadn't really made that much money yet. So they got him signed to a deal that if you looked at it, you said, wow, that's really cheap. But there was a reason for it. It was because he had been injured, and even though he was good, he hadn't been paid yet. So he just wanted to get something solidified where he was getting some guaranteed money. Well, I think the Niners are probably trying to do something similar with Juwan Jennings, although he hasn't had the injuries of Dre Greenlaw. But like, hey, we'll get you here on kind of a medium range deal. But if you're him and you had the year that he had and kind of especially performance on the big stage in the Super Bowl that he had, I think it's probably it behooves him to try to test the market, go through this season, see where it goes and see if he can get, you know, an $8 to $10 million contract, something along the lines of what Kendrick Bourne got from New England when he went there. So, something like that.
All right. We're talking to Nick Wagner here from ESPN. And Nick, I want to, what's left? Like the draft is over, free agency is dwindled down, but what other holes do the Niners have to fill here? How active do you think that they're going to be here in the next couple of weeks and months building up to OTAs and all that stuff?
Oh, I thought you were just asking me, Jess. I was going to say vacation is what's next. My
yes.
the best part of the whole deal. No, the Niners have, they'll have their rookie mini camp coming up here, not this week, but the following week. And then they get into OTAs and then they get into their mandatory mini camp. And I believe the mandatory mini camp is like early June. So they're done, I think, even a week earlier than they normally would be. So there'll be plenty of downtime, which, frankly, guys, this team needs it. I know everyone wants them to be working and in their playbooks 24/7 all the time and not allowed to have real lives. But as long as these seasons have gone the last few years for the 49ers, especially for their veteran guys, that additional time, downtime, I think is really important for them. So it'll be good for them to kind of get away and have that a little additional breather than they normally do. As for roster holes, I mean, I think their eyes, Kyle mentioned it, they're going to be probably looking for tight end help. I think if they can find a veteran tight end out there. And I will say this too, guys, as of today, one little incentive for teams to sign some of these veteran free agents that are out there, they can do it now without having to worry about the compensatory pick formula. Mm. That expires after the draft. So guys who were just unrestricted free agents, not guys who were cut because they were already not counting toward that formula, but you'll start seeing teams making those kinds of moves. It's why you saw, I think it was the Eagles yesterday that signed Mekhi Becton. So things like that agreed to deal, and it becomes official today when he doesn't count in that formula. So I think, you know, you could see some things where they're looking at just to kind of add more depth at a couple of positions. Tight end is certainly the one that would jump out the most to me, but even another tackle who could potentially compete for a swing tackle job. You know, last year they signed Matt Pryor during this time period. Something similar to that could be happening here over the next month or so.
The 49ers traded 2 fifth-round picks to get into the fourth round to draft Isaac Garendo. Is that this kind of move, a running back from Louisville, is that a move similar to the Pearsall one in that it has less to do with this year and more to do with the fact that Elijah Mitchell and Jordan Mason are free agents next year?
Yeah, I think so. I think you could almost draw that direct line. I think you did, Kyle. I think you wrote about it kind of between a lot of their picks and just where they fit in, maybe not so much in 2024, but in 2025 and beyond. The other thing I think that's interesting about that pick, though, is we don't know who their kick returner is going to be. And I think it's interesting to talk about only in the sense that kick returner, like the Niners are openly admitting, like, we don't really even know how that's going to look with the way it's set up now. The rules and the way the kick returns are executed are so different, and it's almost more like having you want a running back type, like someone who can be a one cut and go and is going to like identify holes in a blocking scheme versus what it's been in the past, where half the time you just want your fastest guy who can maybe hit one seam and go. But I wouldn't be shocked if he's competing or maybe even the favorite to be that guy. He does have some experience as a kick returner. Again, it's a little bit different, but still going back and catching a kick is an important part of the function, as Ronnie Bell could attest. So I think that's probably kind of where he's going to fit in. And I'm also just going to throw in a mention here because this is my guy, but, you know, Cody Schrader, the running back from Missouri that they're adding as an undrafted free agent, is just one of those kids that just doesn't go away, right? Like his whole career, he's been kind of overlooked. And he was again in this draft, but he also was the leading rusher in the SEC, which is no small thing last year. He's very much an outside zone, kind of one cut and go, put your foot in the ground and go type of running back. So I think they have a couple of interesting rookies there, particularly if they're looking for the future and a life beyond Elijah Mitchell and Jordan Mason.
And a Cotton Bowl Classic champion, Cody Schrader.
Can't be underrated. if you want somebody who's been through the crucible, who knows how to win at the highest level,
sure. You
go to the Cotton Bowl Classic and find somebody that's got a ring from there.
Absolutely. Nick Wagner does a great job covering the 49ers for ESPN. Nick, thanks so much for hanging out with us today, man.
You got it, guys. See you later.
See ya. There he goes. Love that guy. Big fan.
He's a good dude.
The Niners did in this year's draft what I thought they should do. And that is, when you go look through Ricky Pearsall, their first pick, Renardo Green, their second pick, third pick, Dominic Pooney, fourth pick, Malik Mustafa, fifth pick was Isaac Garendo.
Mm-hmm.
A trade up for him. All five of those players could contribute this year. I think Pooney has a real chance to start at right guard, but could contribute this year, but definitely have upside toward next year. When you can just draw, I just did it with Garendo and Elijah Mitchell. Aaron Banks, the left guard for the 49ers, could be getting a sizable deal in the offseason where the 49ers can't afford them. Mm. It did it with Laken Tomlinson. Maybe that's where Dominic Pooney plays, because he played left guard in college. Talanoa Hufanga, probably going to get priced out of what the 49ers can afford. That's where Malik Mustafa fits in. Deebo Samuel, probably in his last year with the 49ers. That's where you can draw these direct lines, but it's not like, oh, these are projects who really need a lot of work. It's like, no, they could probably go start this year, but chances are that roster spot will be there next year.
They're also not a torn ACL going to sit out all year and redshirt.
Boy, they're not.
That's like a standard 49ers draft pick for so many years.
Dude, it's brutal.
Hey, we're just going to hide this guy, and like, you hide him and he never ever shows up ever again.
Well, I got to tell, here's the bottom line with the 49ers in the draft, and the Raiders are in a little bit different spot because of where they are with their team building. But with the 49ers, it's really clear, just kind of based on just tea leaves and the way the salary cap works and the way players age in the NFL, that this core is on its last ride. This group, this specific Deebo Samuel, Kyle Juszczyk, George Kittle, all those guys who have been around since that 2019 run.
Mm-hmm.
But Trent Williams wasn't there in 19, but he's basically been around for most of this run. This is their last chance as a group to go get a title. For the 49ers specifically, though, like, they've pushed it all in. they've done what they can to try and win a Super Bowl in 1 year. Now they have to start figuring out their next 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where, dude, they got to start hitting on some draft picks here.
Well, not only that, Kyle, but just because we're talking about like today and tomorrow, like the two timeline thing, that doesn't mean just because the window is closing with this group of, you know, Juszczyk, Kittle, like the guy, Trent Williams, it doesn't mean that the 49ers window has to close. Mm-hmm. Like you hope that you can put your foot in the window and say, no, and then push it back open.
Right.
So I think some of the good thing are they haven't sold out their future. You know, after the Trey Lance trade, you know, that they were, you know, sold out for a few years now, but they're past that. So if coming into this offseason, there's an incredible 26-year-old left tackle that's on somebody's roster that is already a stud, but you want to go throw 2 first-round picks at him, maybe you can go bolster. Maybe you can rebuild on the fly using some of the capital that you have. But what you can't do is sort of what the Raiders did forever and just miss on every single draft pick.
Yeah.
And then, so the cupboard's bare. Because mm-hmm. for every De'Aaron Fox, you got to have a Keon Ellis. You got to have one guy that makes a bunch of money and one guy that doesn't make a bunch of money.
That's it, dude.
And you got to keep doing that repeatedly. You have to keep finding these guys and keep building and building it. And that's something that, you know, it's really, that will determine how great of a GM John Lynch is,
mm-hmm.
and what Kyle Shanahan can do as far as a dynasty. It really does come down to, can you make a couple of key picks in a draft to find another Fred Warner, find another, you know, all these guys that they have built out this roster with that weren't top tier mm-hmm. picks. How do you find those, that next group to keep building this thing?
And how do you do that? It becomes even more important if Brock Purdy is going to be making $40+ million a year.
Oh yeah.
Where now all of a sudden you don't have that luxury of a quarterback, because even Jimmy Garoppolo's deal, when he signed it in the 2018 offseason, it was the biggest contract for a quarterback. And 2 years later, it was, I think,
pennies.
I think it was just outside the top 10.
Yeah.
Or right there, number 10. It immediately became not that expensive for a quarterback. They've been very cheap at that position for so long. And that becomes a really, really tough hurdle to clear with your team building, particularly when it's Brock Purdy and it's not Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. It's not Lamar Jackson. It's not one of these players who just individually elevates everybody around him. At least Brock hasn't been that yet. We'll see if he is. But yeah, man, you just go look at the last year's draft. Jair Brown, probably going to start this year.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Moody, okay, fine. But then Cameron Latu, third round pick, tight end. May not even make the team this year.
Oof.
Yeah, Darrell Luter, cornerback, probably special teams guy. He'll compete for a starting job. They really like him, but TBD. Robert Beal, defensive end, had a cup of coffee last year, but who knows? D. Winters, couldn't get on the field at linebacker. Same thing with Jalen Graham, their 7th-round pick. Ronnie Bell, the receiver, may not make the team this year. Like, last year's draft is like, dude, what it? You gotta get something.
Yeah, you gotta fortify. Yeah. You gotta, you know, stack the deck.
The other thing is this is their first draft without Adam Peters, who for so long was their like head personnel guy. John Lynch is like the Queen of England, right? Or I guess King of England now. But he's like the king of it in that he's more of a figurehead than like an actual person doing stuff. And that's Adam Peters, their head personnel guy since Kyle Shanahan got there in 2017, is now in Washington. So there's just a different philosophy in that front office and how they scout and rank and draft players. So I'm fascinated to see how that works out.
Well, yeah, because that could be a good thing. It can also be a bad thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Adam Peters did a pretty good job of team building. We'll see if this group can carry it over.
But I'm okay. I'm okay to see what happens.
Yeah. You have to at some point. Like, this is the reality of the NFL, man.
Yeah.
I mean, the Kings are running into it in the NBA. Like, when you have a really, when you have a good team with good players, it starts to get expensive.
Well, that and not only that, but you start losing people mm-hmm. like Jordy Fernandez going to mm-hmm. the Brooklyn Nets to take over as head coach. When you have mm-hmm. success,
Malik like, Monk,
you start losing players. Yeah, maybe whether you lose Malik or not,
mm-hmm.
You know, again, you help create a player. He did a lot of work, but you also did a lot of work to put him in the right situation, and you can't hold on to everybody. It's tough.
Man, wild. I'm glad the NFL draft is over.
We never got a handoff. What happened to our guys?
No, it's fine. Kenny was waiting for us to be done with Nick.
Oh, okay.
And then by the time I realized it, he had texted me, and it was like 11:50.
Oh, okay.
Like, man, by the time he gets in here, it's going to be 11:52, and we got like 4 minutes. So I just told him to skip.
We'll do more of like a high five than a handoff.
Yeah, he's out there. He's out there talking to who's he talking to? Kim, Aaron? I think Aaron might have been out there. I don't know. He's talking to Kim.
All right.
So it's fine.
Yeah, good show.
Isaac Arendo, by the way, the running back the Niners drafted at Louisville. I was watching him, and I'm like, man, this guy reminds me of Elijah Mitchell.
Mm.
Some people have said Raheem Mostert. For me, Elijah Mitchell was what hit me. Just okay. The way he runs through contact and his balance is really good. And then I went and looked, and over a three-year stretch, he missed 23 games with three different injuries.
Oh.
I was like, oh, man, it is Elijah Mitchell.
Oh.
He started one game in college.
He never really got his shot until his final year, right?
Yeah.
In Louisville.
He had 231 carries in 6 years of college.
Oh, that's wild.
That's insane. That's such a small number.
But also, look at the age. I mean, you're the Niners. You're not drafting a 21-year-old, 20-year-old, 22-year-old kid. Sometimes you got to go a little older.
Almost all their guys were fifth or sixth-year seniors.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's it. That's going to do it for us today.
All right.
More NBA playoffs tonight. What do we got? I got the lookie here from Charlie.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't have anything to give away today, guys. Sorry.
Yeah, that's new.
Yeah. We're done giving away money. Tomorrow, NBA playoffs, Sixers at Knicks. The Knicks trying to close out that series. And then Wednesday at 6:30, we will have Mavs at Clippers as well. NBA playoff action right here on ESPN 1320. We'll get back to the Sacramento Kings tomorrow. James and I started having a discussion before the show today. And we were like, hey, this needs to be the whole show tomorrow.
Yeah.
So we're going to do that. We're going to dive back into the Sacramento Kings tomorrow. And of course, sprinkle in whatever other NBA and NFL news is out there as well. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We've been the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center. Woo!
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.